seven, eight, nine, ten. Go.
Go.
Good afternoon. And it's Glenn, who hasn't been on the podcast for a while. However, I happened to bump into Brian Palmer and Callum Murray, who, as we know, are editors of the ELOCH. And I was informed that it was their 50th anniversary. Now, whether this is their birthday or it's an anniversary, I don't know how you put it. However, we know at the moment, because we've interviewed Brian, that he's the editor of the ELOCH, and we know how he started. However, for the first couple of questions, we're going to go over to Callum and ask, how did you start or get involved with the ELOCH?
I was a teacher in the high school for a great number of years, and I retired early, and I was looking for something to do that would fill my time and would be of interest to me. And the editor of the ELOCH at the time had resigned, and they were looking for somebody new. And I just applied for the
Callum
job.
If he knew anyone.
And I just applied for the job, and they realised how brilliant I would be, and they gave the job to me.
That's exactly what he said when he started, yeah.
I'll
be brilliant at this.
I don't think we've got an hour to discuss that point. So we all know and love the ELOCH.
Yeah.
And I was only saying to Brian the other day, how has it lasted so long when smaller or lesser known newspapers have gone to the wall since COVID? You two and the team have obviously kept the ELOCH going, but how have you done that?
Well, can I start there? I think it's because ELOCH has a wonderful community who want to support local things, and they embraced the ELOCH 50 years ago, and they've just kept doing it. Like, they want to buy the ELOCH, they want to know what's happening here, and they just keep going.
I think also based on the number that we send to the mainland each issue, there's quite a lot of either former ELOCHs or people that have got family or something that want to keep in touch, because there's quite, I couldn't tell you the exact numbers, but there's quite a lot that go off the island every fortnight. So it's between that and between the community aspect of it. There's also, although your point earlier about the fact that some of the others have gone to the wall in the meantime, we've always considered that because if you want to do something on ELOCH, you've only got the ELOCH, because there's a definitive difference between the ELOCH and not ELOCH. So if you wanted to do something on ELOCH, you kind of had to use the ELOCH to do it. But then, to an extent, the same could be said of any of the other places. Maybe it's just dogged determination and community or whatever, I don't know.
I know we've discussed that there's all this, everybody's on eBay, Google, and on the ELOCH community page, if you want to find out what's going on ELOCH, you just go into this. But there's a lot of the older generation like myself who rely on a conversation with a certain gentleman on Bermore Square, or as somebody said to me, why isn't he doing a little birdie told me. And this is where I don't go into the community page or anything. You know, so if anything's going on, you tend sometimes, because you're only a fortnightly printer, you miss something.
Yeah, but that's always been a problem. That's been a problem since day one. In fact, more of a problem in day one, because it was only monthly when it started, only for maybe a couple of months, and then it started into fortnightly. I think it's a case of, Callum did and so did I, and I had this conversation with a couple of the folk at the Open Times. The competition is not each other. The competition is Facebook or Twitter or whatever, mm-hmm. In which case the idea would be to try and provide something in the ELOCH that you don't get on Facebook. No disrespect to any of the people that write on there, but nobody has to research anything. If we publish anything in the Eilidh and we get it wrong, there could be consequences of that. You can write what the heck you like on Facebook or Twitter. And also the fact that if you read it in the paper, I would like to think, and I'm sure Callum would agree with it, that it has to be, well, as perfectly formed as we can get it, mm-hmm. as in grammatically correct, etc., etc. Whereas some of the stuff that's on social media, it's probably a damning indictment of the education system to a certain extent.
And because the Eilidh is a two-weekly publication, the editor constantly has to decide what's newsworthy. So sometimes, like, if something happened just after an issue, is it going to be mentioned in the next issue? Well, these are the decisions the editor's got to make, really. But one thing the editor's got to bear in mind all the time is that the Eilidh is a kind of record of what happens on Eilidh. If you go down to the office, you'll see the volumes, the 50 volumes across the shelves right behind the editor's desk there. And if anybody wants to know what happened 30 years or 40 years ago, they could go into the Eilidh and find out. I suspect that that's not going to be true of Facebook, people trying to find out what happened. So the Eilidh is very much a record of what happens on Eilidh, and it's up to the editor to make sure that he maintains that record.
I think, Callum and I have both, during our tenureship at the Eilidh, tried to underline the point that tell us the stuff that's going on, because it, as Callum says, it's a record of what's happened on Eilidh. So if you hold an event and you stick it on Facebook, well, I'm not on Facebook, I don't know if Callum is or not, and there's a lot of people that aren't on Facebook, so nobody knows it's happening. So it's not really, it's nice to get advertising because that's what keeps the thing going, but it's not, if it's something that's happening, like maybe we're being incredibly topical at the moment, it depends on who's listening to this, but last Saturday morning the local mod was held for the first time in the high school, which I knew nothing about. And a lot of other people knew nothing about, because nobody gave us any. The last I'd heard was that they'd asked if there was anybody interested in keeping the local mod going, and the last I'd heard was that they hadn't had any great response. So from that point of view, and it would make no difference whether it was Callum or whether it was I, if you think that the event is not happening, or there's nothing happening in that sense, you're not going to go looking for the story, because it as far as you're concerned, it's not there. And for some strange reason, nobody told us about the mod. So there was nothing in the paper prior to the mod taking place.
And what's interesting there is lots of people, when they read the Eilidh, they've got this notion that somehow the Eilidh has got lots of reporters who can be round the island, just peeking through letterboxes and windows, finding out what's going on all the time. Whereas in reality, the Eilidh has one person doing the editorial job, the reporting job, the same person doing that. And they depend on a two-way process. They depend on the people on the island contributing stuff to their own newspaper, fortnightly as it is. And the Eilidh always welcomes contributions from others, and has always been at pains to point out that you can contribute even if you think that you're not a good writer, because it's the job of the editors to take the copy that you send in and sort it out and make it fit for publication.
Yeah.
So that's the way it goes. Like, I can remember a famous, when I was editor, somebody sent us an irate letter saying that they had been performing somewhere, but we weren't there to where was the Eilidh when he was doing that? So that was a bit of fun. You know, there is only one person who does it. So the Eilidh depends on contributions from the people who live here.
But do you not go out looking for a contribution?
Of course. Of course you. I mean, it's a two-way process, but you can't be everywhere all the time.
Yeah,
and
no.
Metaphorically, you go looking for stuff. I mean, you don't actually sort of step out the front door and wander around, but because it's a community newspaper, and that works in two ways. One, it's kind of the responsibility, if you like, of the community to let us know things are going on. It's obviously the editor's decision is final, as the cliche goes.
Right.
So depending on how much space you've got and what else is in, it depends on whether you actually take note of it or not. But as I've said to folk, and I'm probably to the point of boredom, if you don't send it in, I'm not publishing it. Because if I don't, I can't. You know, if I didn't know it was on, the girls in the office are very good. The other folk that work in there are very good at knowing stuff that's on and pass it on, so we can then go and phone people or email people to get the information. But to a certain extent, if you're running, I don't know, a football match or a coffee morning or something like that, there's no harm in telling folk. It doesn't cost you any money.
No.
Advertising, it would cost you money, but to tell people that it's actually on, or that there's an event happening or such like, there's no cost for that. That we would definitely welcome the contributions. That, as I say, it becomes down to somewhere along the line it has to end. We can't print like 48 page e-looks to put everything in. So it very much depends on priority, and that priority has to be adjudged by the editor, whoever that is at the time. Callum's priorities would probably be different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
We need the information in the first place to prioritise.
But what about the future? I noticed you did an article on AI.
That was very interesting. I was shocked. The AI, for those who don't know, is artificial intelligence, and within asking it to
describes
write,
you and I quite well.
asking this application to write an article about Isla, it did it within 10 seconds, and that was in the last e-look. But it just shows. I think when you read that, you find there's something personal missing in that sort of stuff. I think the minute that the e-look was written, that all the article was written by AI, artificial intelligence, would be the minute that people would stop buying it. Because people really do buy it, and we keep going back to you. Brian said this early on. People buy it to keep in touch with their community.
Mm-hmm.
I know people on Isla who, people on the mainland actually subscribe to the, and they have copies sent to them. Other people on the island keep their own copies that they've bought down in the co-op or wherever, and they post them off in bundles to relatives.
Glenn's putting his hand up there just for everybody watching.
and they send them, and people do that. I personally, with the e-look, I read two versions. I love to have the paper copy in my hands, get ink on my hands and so on, and read it through. But I also like to have the PDF version, because I like to see the pictures in colour. Mm-hmm. And so on. So I like to use both, and you'll find that people do have both as well. People subscribe to a PDF version, people subscribe to the print version, and people sometimes they just want to see both of them as well.
We actually have a subscriber in the States who, a number of years ago, admitted that they get the PDF and then they print it out. Because the postage to the States it'd be much, but yeah, it can't be that much cheaper actually to go and print out 20 pages or whatever. But I think people print out the occasional one.
We always buy two, one for the house, one we haven't done PDF, I must catch up on myself, and one always goes to the family on the mainland. Mm-hmm. And then my uncle, for example, phones me on every second Thursday and says, "You never told me about it. Well, that was an e-look. You never told me." You know, and you think, "I read the e-look, I didn't see that." But of course, being local, you know when you read the e-look, "Oh, I know about that." But he'll go through it minutely and pick up it. "What about this new distillery? What about that boat?" And you think to yourself, "But it's there." But he literally goes through it, you know.
Nice to know.
Mm-hmm. But then he gives it to his daughter, and his daughter gives it to her husband's mother, So it does the round, you know, the
see
menu.
The money we've been doing.
So we're not going to make it a long conversation because we're very grateful for you to spare the time. And 50 years, and are we doing a celebration or are you doing an article?
There'll be a kind of four-page pull-out in the 50th issue.
Uh-huh.
Don't think we're going to do much more than that, to be honest. I mean, I know people are quite happy that we've made it to 50 years, but
uh-huh.
I think we've learned from previous years not to go overboard.
No.
You know, 50 years ago, in the very first volume one, number one, they called it, and it cost 3p. That was the price of it then. 3p. But by calling it volume one, number one, and they showed, the editor then, Mary McIntyre, showed that she thought this was going to keep going. So we're on volume 50 now.
Aye,
okay. 50. Volume one, number one. And when the very first one was produced, on Isla, there was a showing of the Cheviot, the Stag, and the Black Oil, a very famous play in Scotland. And its writer and producer, John McGrath, when asked what he thought of the first edition of the Eilidh, said it was better than nothing. And that's still our claim.
Yeah, we've tried to adhere to that, you know, that it would be better than nothing.
Well, what would you, if it went for some unknown reason, what would make it terminate as a paper? Would it be, as you say, there's Google and there's this and there's that, there's AI?
Cost?
I would think, I was going to say economics is most likely thing. I mean, it would be feasible, as somebody suggested at the beginning of COVID, that we just switch to the online version. Because that doesn't, well, it costs the wages, but it doesn't cost any printing, doesn't cost any paper, etc. However, as you mentioned earlier on, people like to have a paper. That seems to be, this is based on pretty close to nothing whatsoever, but the general gist is that folk that are under, say, 28, 10, no, they maybe read their parents' Eilidh, but they tend not to bother with Eilidh. Once you get to your late 20s or into your 30s, folks seem to start, whether that's going to be a continuing trend, because with everybody having everything on their phones and whatnot nowadays, it might not continue. It's certainly been the case sort of up till now. But yeah, economics, I would think, is the...
I was going to say, people don't realise that the Eilidh is actually a charity. They think it rubs its own. The Eilidh's always on a shoestring. The Eilidh manages through advertising to get enough money to pay for the ink and the paper and so on, and through the circulation manages barely to scrape enough money together to pay the part-time wages of the people who work on it. So, you know, In order for the Eilidh to continue, it needs somehow to be able to keep getting enough money to continue.
The advertising is the main thing, and I mean, there's been economies made. We've looked at various different things in terms of the production, etc. But it comes down to the fact that once you've created it, you have to print it, and then you have to distribute it, etc., etc. Like prices recently, I would imagine everybody's aware of the cost of living crisis, but the cost of paper crisis is just about as bad. I think in 2022 our paper prices increased about four times, and not by small amounts either. It's quite an expensive process, certainly a lot more expensive than it used to be, and you're balancing that against newspapers in general are declining in sales. I don't think there's a single newspaper that I can think of that's actually increased its sales of late, but there has to be a balance point. Fortunately, that's not my jurisdiction. That's got numbers in it. I'm just interested in the words.
Avid readers of the Eilidh, obviously, and the Sunday Post. So I sent him for a Sunday Post on Sunday. It's £2.60.
Yeah.
I thought, pardon?
Yeah. There was somebody in it, Debbie's on Saturday? Yeah, in it Saturday, bought two papers and it cost him £6.80. So yeah, you have to be a real enthusiast.
But you've increased your price to £160.
Yeah.
And your PDF is £30.
Yeah.
Is this a board decision or is this you advising them because of you're now into a colour front and back, which is fantastic?
Yeah. I think it's something you just keep an eye on to find out whether, you know, if things are going downhill, you can generally tend, over a period of time, you can tell whether it's a kind of general decline in income, so to speak, in which case that's probably the fixed price against what it's costing us to do it. In which case, I think the price should be reviewed every year. I'm not saying it should be increased every year, but it should be reviewed every year, just purely in the light of costs. The PDF is a slightly different thing because it's you don't have to print it. Theoretically, I don't know if numbers would bear this out, certainly when we started it, theoretically, if everybody bought a PDF, we would make more money because we don't actually have to print it.
And the interesting thing about costs as well, I've always thought, I've had people, when I was editor, people would say to me, why is the subscription for the PDF so much cheaper than the subscription for the sent out paper versions?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because most of the money for the paper version goes to Royal Mail to deliver
it. Postage.
Oh,
it's postage.
The postage cross, the postage and the envelopes to put it in and send it away. That's where the difference between, you know, buying 26 e-looks a year and subscribing to 26 e-looks a year, the difference is entirely postage. That's why I think it was 2003, 2004, we started the PDF edition. And to be honest, if PDF hadn't been available, we probably wouldn't have made it to our 50th because people that stay in Japan, Australia, Canada, America, you would have to be a real enthusiast. I think at the moment it's something like £130 a year for a print subscription to America, if anyone wanted to take one out, and there's not enough. Whereas they can subscribe to the PDF and it's still economic, so they still.
I know with the postage, because the e-look costs £160. The postage to the mainland is £180. First class large. It's £180.
Yeah.
So the postage is costing you more than the e-look.
Because that's what we're having to do. Funnily enough, somebody asked us today about the calendar, and that's something that we have to look at. Once we get the calendar done, somebody needs to nip down to the post office and find out what it's going to cost to post a calendar out. And it's more than likely to be more expensive than it was this time last year.
Let's not end on doom and gloom.
No. It's not doom and gloom. The fact that we're here is not doom and gloom.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that, as you know, I was a board member on the e-look, and I always follow it. Because it should always be there, and I'm a non e-look, but you know it should always be there. It's like when I go home, which is very rare. The Rithin Times is where I come from, was a large paper. What do we call them?
Broadsheet.
Now it's a small one, but if it wasn't for the local, like yourselves, community and people, it wouldn't be there.
I think it's probably something that's, to a certain extent, it's possibly taken for granted. You know, like every 2 weeks, this thing appears in the shops. I don't think sales should necessarily be. You know, you should be trying to get people to buy it simply because of the amount of effort we put into producing it. I think for anything, I don't think that's a sufficient reason to buy any newspaper for that matter. It ought to be on the content.
Uh-huh.
But again, as we said earlier, if people don't provide us with at least some of the content or even a hint of the content that we could follow up, yeah, it's.
And I can see people contributing. I found when I was editor, the problem was to convince people that they were good enough to write things for the e-look. You know, people had this idea that what will my neighbours think? What will the other people think? Do they think I'm up myself because I'm writing for the e-look? And they shouldn't think that way at all. They should just sort of say. Everybody wants to hear what everybody in the community's got to say about things. So Well,
look at, I mean, Sharon McCarry that we get to does a grumble from Green. Yes. She still figures that, you know, maybe people are not that interested, but it's exactly the opposite. All the feedback we've had is it's very popular, which is why we continue to ask it. Charlene Busali, that does the books, think of it, that's incredibly popular as well. That, people are very down on their own abilities these days. I think... unlike Callum and I, who've probably got enough confidence to think that we're actually doing what we're supposed to be doing, you know, you do it and then hide under the table once it's done.
I was away. I was having lunch at a certain establishment, and a certain young lady said to me, "What are you doing today?" I said, "Well, believe it or not, I'm meeting Brian and Callum for a podcast. Would you ask that Callum when is A Little Birdie Told Me coming back on?"
Yeah.
So it shows that people are reading it and they are missing something.
Yeah. That was over. I stopped being editor over 5 years ago, and people still accost me in the street.
And me.
It certainly was very popular. It was fun. I thoroughly enjoyed doing that. It really involved trying to find 12 pieces of about 50 words a time, 600 words was each one. People used to say to me, "How can you be so cheeky about folk?" and I had to confess that usually before anything was printed in the Eilidh, I talked to the people to see if they were willing to be ridiculed or whatever. So yes, it was popular, but if they want a little bird, they could send some of their own gossip into the Eilidh as well, if they wanted
that. So on that note, if you want A Little Birdie Told Me, you have the Eilidh permission to send a little birdie story to them. Gentlemen, what can I say? It's been a fantastic hour listening and catching up with the information on the Eilidh, and long may it last.
Yeah, can we come back when we're 100?
Yes, we'll be delighted.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll be here, some of us, but we'll be delighted. Any parting words, gentlemen?
Yeah. No, just as long as people are enjoying it, as long as it's worthwhile.
And buy it.
Yeah, definitely buy it. That's the overriding thing, is that, yeah, it has to be bought. Even buy two copies.
Oh, we always buy two.
Stereo.
We buy two.
Yeah, you've got two eyes.
If you've got glasses, you need four copies.
Yeah. Oh, it's not like this. I don't know. I think we are. I'm saying you shouldn't say. That's us done.